today.
It's a red, white, support the blue flashback weekend. Flashing back to our favorite interviews with those that have put their lives on the line for their fellow citizens.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
And it is. We are talking with two guests that I find to be extremely interesting, Susan Constantine and Phil Waters. Susan, a trial consultant and body language expert, president of the Human Behavior Academy, and Phil Waters, retired detective and current president and CEO of Kindred Spirits Investigation and Security, Inc. You guys always offer so much into the conversation. I want to touch on a piece of the trial of Lori Vallow-Daybell that happened very early on, but I so want to hear the opinion of both of you as to what we were witnessing when it was happening. And that's taking us back to day two of testimony, where Lori decided, I don't want to go back into the courtroom after the morning of decomposing children pictures, but ordered back in. That behavior that we were seeing, we saw some tears. We saw some anger. We saw uncommon behaviors for the usually confident and I know something you don't know looking Lori Vallow-Daybell. What were we witnessing at that moment in time?
Well, the fact that she didn't want to go back in there, she was already prepared psychologically what she was going to hear. Mm-hmm. So because she doesn't want to connect with or come to the realization of what actually what those bodies look like. Because I don't know if necessarily she knew the gruesome detail of what her children actually, how they were found, one being bound by the plastic wrap and the other one was burnt. I mean, when you would hear the gruesome details of it, I don't think that she wanted to know. So it's really easier for her to deflect it, to walk away from it, pretend it doesn't exist, to make what they did okay. So I think that's part of it. The other thing is that when she was her behavior, and I think the biggest thing that people are questioning is about her laughter, you know, and there's all different types of laughter. You know, people laugh because they want to expel happiness and joy. They laugh sometimes when they're uncomfortable or uneasy. Some people even laugh at a funeral just because it's just a high anxiety situation. The laugh that she has when you tie it to the content of what she's actually hearing, mm-hmm. that's the important part because you have to tie it. What was said? What was the response? And the fact that she laughed off her son's concern mm-hmm. about the children, it really falls in such a psychotic evilness that you and I are human beings can't even relate to because it's not something that we are familiar with. But it is it's an evil laugh. The evil laugh comes from evilness. And so, you know, when she's here, I'm laughing because I'm laughing it off because it's preposterous, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to even wrap your head around it. But it's when they find that they have their thrill seeking. I even wrote this down. And when they impose cruelty on another person, sometimes there's this joy. They get an arousal from it. That's actually called duping delight by Dr. Ekman. It's also a form of a manic laughter. And I think that there is psychologically stuff that's going on with her. But the bottom line is that she's not human. I think that I'm not surprised. I don't understand why she hasn't built a portal right there in her own cell and just beamed out. Because why couldn't she? She could build a portal anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. And that laugh that you're talking about, I know exactly what you're referring to. It's a very creepy, it's almost a cackle-ish laugh. And it's at such a horrible point in the conversation with her son, who is just trying to get some glimpse of his mother that doesn't seem to exist anymore back to come to reality. It was spooky. I mean, it was a very spooky, evil feeling laugh. What did you guys make of her personality in that phone call as a whole? I'll go to Phil on that one, and then I want your insight too, Susan.
Well, let me just make a comment about the laughing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Susan gave a great analysis of the kind of the clinical definition about that stuff. For me, since I'm a very simple man, you know, I'm a keep it simple, stupid guy, right? So for me, what we call that in the interview room, we call that inappropriate laughter. When someone does that, and it's something that they cannot control, it is a reflex to what they're hearing that is making them feel anxious.
Okay.
So when that happens, I know that whatever we have just discussed, shared, it's creating anxiety for them. So that gives me a direction on where I may need to go with the conversation, or do I need to hold that back? And we will return to it and see if we get the same kind of response to that same series of questions, so, or that discussion. And it's to me, I mean, the sound of it and all that, that is not that important to me in the interview room. It's the fact that they're doing it.
Okay.
So the laughter itself, the cackling, I mean, that's just unique to the way they laugh. I mean, you know, we can point out all sorts of people, you know, Hillary Clinton. I mean, good grief, you know, that cackling.
Sure. Everyone has a different laugh.
The current vice president, that cackling, that's just the way they do it. And since I brought her up, Harris, watch her. Almost every word that comes out of her mouth has some more form of deception in it, because every time she says something that she knows is not true, she does that cackle. Every single time. It's amazing.
Wow.
So this person is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And so when she's responding, and when we hear about what you talked about, Tony, about she was taken out of the courtroom, she's crying, she's doing all this emoting and all this stuff after she's seen these pictures, and she did not want to go back in that courtroom and see those pictures. Mm-hmm. And the judge wisely said, you know what? I mean, he didn't say it in these words, but if this jury has to sit here and look at what you have alleged to have done to your children, then you're going to sit here and look at it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it was similar to the Murdaugh trial when he started slinging snot all over the place.
Yeah.
And then that's true crying. You know, that those are real tears. That she may have become, as Susan has talked about, just overwhelmed with what the reality was about what happened to those children, to her children. And now she's got it right up here in Technicolor. And that's a lot for someone to take in. And having never seen those pictures before, because they were gruesome.
Oh, yeah.
They were horrible. And because you've got this religious component to this whole mess. And in my career, I've seen one case that I used to teach about the occult and cults and that kind of thing. So I'm well familiar with her cult activities and this religious component of these things. So she, I saw one case in 23 years in homicide in Houston that I would call a ritualistic homicide, because there're not really many of them around.
Sure.
There just aren't. And this one is about as close to being have a component of a ritualistic homicide as I've seen. And because you got to remember that her and the idiot that she's running around with, I don't even like to say their names, so that's why I'm kind of going around this. But the idiot that she gets hooked up with, they kill his wife, and you know, and she's killed. She has her brother kill her husband, and she's got all these dead bodies all around her. And they are feeding off of each other in this cult that is based on Mormonism. It's got some Christian aspects to it. It's got all this other stuff, this other stuff to it. And then the children were zombies and people are possessed. And they've got these portals and all this just crazy. I mean, these are like, you know, B-grade science fiction movies.
Yes.
You know, put together with the Book of Mormon and biblical connotations. I mean, there is so much of this stuff. And then the Night of the Living Dead, you know, on top of everything
yes,
else.
Yes.
So now I can tell you, it's interesting to me as a detective and looking at the evidence here. I'm not looking at this thing from an emotional standpoint. I'm just looking at it as a detective, as the probative evidentiary value that these pictures, these scenes where these bodies were recovered, has. So you've got bodies that are burned up. You've got body parts and fat and tissue in a bucket. I mean, I'm going to tell you, this is a reflection of the Old Testament when the Ammonites were sacrificing their children to Moloch. So that makes it interesting to me to see how they have combined so many of these things from a religious aspect, and then they're using these things to justify having killed these children, killed his wife, killed her husband. I mean, it is incredible stuff when you, if you, and I, you know, and I know about these things because I've been involved in these things. So it's interesting to me to see this investigation and the way these detectives, because you've got this stuff going on in what, three different states, I think Arizona, Idaho, and Hawaii.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got all sorts of craziness going on here. And so for them to wrap all of these different affirmative links and bring it down to where the prosecutors are able to present this stuff in a very, very cohesive argument about her taking part in these activities, I think is really, really brilliant. They've really done a very good job, at least what I have listened to in terms of the trial. So I'm sorry to go off onto that, but no. That was just...
You know what, Phil, is also, and just kind of what I'm thinking about when you're talking, Phil, is that, you know, a lot of things that we see here, some things are based on truth, right? There is truth. It's just counterfeited. It's just demonized. But there's always a niblet of truth. And how she got into this, and then now it's become her belief system, is, to me, is so mind-boggling. And the only thing, and probably Phil could speak more about that, about the cults, but I can't imagine it just happens overnight. It's a slow indoctrination of a belief system and just kind of pushing the envelope just a little bit each time to where your belief system is completely changed. I do think that she does believe what she says she believes. I think she does. So that's what I think is really interesting about it.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We got a lot more with Phil and Susan, so be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss more of our conversations with them about the case throughout the week. You can even get an ad-free experience through Apple Podcasts. Be sure to check that out. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.